Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm going to make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk!
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do!
I'm the Joker, baby!
Welcome to LCB Season 2, Episode 24. Got me, Ken Jack. We have Chris Castellani, and we're joined by Fights to do a little bit of talk about Kimmy, the movie starring Zoe Kravitz. I asked John on because I know John's a big time Zoe Kravitz guy, right? What's that show that you watched that she was in?
High Fidelity. A great show. Zoe Kravitz. I'm so in love with her. She makes me like problematic. Like the second I see her, I don't think of anything but beauty. Like she should have other adjectives, and she's smart and she's talented and all this. I see her, I'm like, that is a stunning piece of human existence.
Mm-hmm. Damn, can't wait. What do you think of the Batman trailer when you first saw her pop up?
Oh, that's all I'll say.
So Jeff's not on this episode. Obviously had a very major loss. And so shout out to him. I know obviously going through a lot right now. He gave us a little message. He just wanted to say to everyone, all the LCB fans, the Dozen fans, Barstool fans, whatever, everyone else, he said that he appreciates all the kind words, and obviously he'll be back soon. Gonna be in the meantime, we're gonna do a little substitute here. Before we get to move forward towards our interview of Kimmy, let's talk a little bit about some news items. First off, we got our first looks, or not first looks, we got new looks at the Batman, at the Flash, at Black Adam and Aquaman, all those DC properties that everyone knows and definitely loves, especially some of these. The Batman ones I thought looked pretty cool. The Flash, I really don't care for the Flash at all. Black Adam looked really heavily CGI'd, which is okay because that's like just part of the deal there. And Aquaman, just like it was very minimal look, I thought, but also it's kind of the same thing as the first Aquaman movie where like you have a very heavy dependence on CGI. But Chris, what did you think?
I mean, they show very little. We've already seen so much of the Batman. I'm with you. I am not buying Flash stock right now. And it's too bad because I actually like Muschietti as a director, and I thought he did a great job with it. But I don't know. That's a cinematic Hail Mary, what that fucking movie is. I mean, and I love Michael Keaton, but you know, he's 70 and he's going to play Batman. Come on. But, the one weird thing that stands out to me is like, how has it taken this long for The Rock to play a superhero?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's the guy, he's 50, right? At this point. And that's bizarre to me. I know very little about that character.
Not necessary for him to play a superhero because he is one.
Yeah, maybe mm-hmm. that's part of it.
It's almost like bringing sand to the beach. It's like, oh yeah, he has magic. Like you see him and you're like, that guy's a superhero. What does he need superhero powers for? He is one.
That's a really good way of putting it because he's not unassuming enough to be a superhero. Like right. No one would suspect Tom Holland was going to kick your ass, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This guy is fucking massive. It's. From what I saw, there's nothing that was like weak or lame that from what I've seen. Basically, my opinions remain unchanged. I think the Batman looks awesome, and I have pretty serious question marks about the other properties. Though I do think I like James Wan, so I do think Aquaman 2 will be pretty good, but I'm just kind of so-so about everything else.
I'm glad you said that. I thought I was going to be kind of the downer on the podcast today, because this is actually, I think it's a broader thing. I am over trailers. I think they ruin them. Like, I used to, dude, I used to go on, like, traileraddict.com, and I'd watch shows, I'd love them. Now there's a new one every day, and I can't keep up. And now they've become combined, where it's like, here's a trailer for our new 6 movies. It's like, what are you talking about? I don't want to watch all this. And it's almost become overwhelming, where it's hard to keep up with everything. Because it used to be a moment. Like, when a trailer dropped, it was a big thing. Like, there's a trailer dropping, this is huge. Now, Ken Jack, you sent me the rundown today. And I'm a big movie fan. I'm not to your guys' extent, but I'm very involved in the movie world. And I was looking, I was just watching trailers. Like, I didn't even know these came out. Days ago, I was like, I didn't even heard of these.
There's a lot of these, and especially with, I think, things like the Batman. Like, I don't want to watch any of them now because I want everything to be so fresh, and I don't want any like big moments to be given away. Or even like, it's one of those things where you can watch a trailer and it might not be giving away a moment, but it'll give away a context of something. So when I'll be watching the movie later, I'll be like, oh, we're not at this part yet, and this scene hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I
hate that. I hate that. I haven't watched any of the new trailers for Batman. I've only seen the little bits and teasers like in this one, because I don't want to know at all. I want everything to feel fresh. I mean, I don't care if they spoil Flash or, you know, Aquaman or whatever, but I don't want Batman spoiled. That's one where I'm too excited for it.
Batman. I'm with Castellani the whole way. I think Batman looks great.
So fucking good. Pretty,
yeah. I was very, the first Black Adam trailer, which was like a fucking Dwayne Johnson TED talk. That was very disappointing. And everything I've seen since then has been kind of disappointing as well. So Black Adam, I have question marks about for sure. The Flash, I'm the same boat. Like, I'll probably see it, but I don't care. It'll be something I see.
That's Noah Centineo didn't sell you on Black Adam.
What's that?
Noah Centineo didn't sell you on Black Adam.
Oh, I didn't even know he's in it. I might be out entirely.
That is the other thing I hate about trailers. And they do that in theaters now, where the main actor will say, hey, I'm in this movie, enjoy this trailer. You're doing a trailer within a trailer within a trailer. Just show the clip. You know, like, we know you're in the movie. We're going to watch it. Yeah, I know. I'm with. And trailers are also too long at this point, too.
Yeah. Like, I was just watching. Because again, the rundown. I actually, because I'm kind of out on trails, I actually haven't seen the Jurassic World one. I love the Jurassic Park franchise, and I started. I was like 2.5. So it was 2:50. Like 3 minutes.
That's insane. Yeah.
Give away so much too. At the end, you're right about the TED Talk thing. By the way, that's I think the first time I'd seen that was when me and Jeff went to see the Last Jedi, and there was a trailer, and it was John Cena giving a TED talk about the movie Ferdinand, where he plays an animated bull. And like, he's like, hey, I'm John Cena, and I'm going to talk to you about Ferdinand, the new movie. And we're just like, what the fuck is this? Why are you giving us like an Uncle Sam speech about your movie? It's so weird. Sorry, what were you saying?
I was just going to say that my brother is watching Belfast in the other room, and I can hear the Van Morrison, and it's killing me because I just want to go watch it. That movie's so fucking good. Yeah. So good.
Love that movie. So next up, we have we got our first look at the Amazon $1 billion Lord of the Rings series. And it's just like, you know, it's just images, it's set pictures. They just want to give you like a little sneak peek of everything. It is one where I looked at it and immediately didn't think it looked particularly good, just based off the costumes and everything. Because like, this is something like Lord of the Rings is so iconic, especially that original trilogy, for that the way that the costumes looked and the way everything just felt. It was very, very specific. And the way I look at these costumes, they look very much more like Wheel of Time, which they recently made, which was a huge bummer, if you ask me, because everyone was like, this show is, it's the new Game of Thrones. It's everything. It's blah, blah, blah. It's Game of Thrones before Game of Thrones. It's all these crazy things. And that show kind of just had like this YA, you know, young adult feel to it, which I didn't particularly enjoy. And also they had one of the characters plays a dwarven queen. She doesn't have a beard. That's like the one identifying character of dwarven women in the Lord of the Rings universe. They got beards. That's their thing. That's the one thing about them, and they didn't give her a beard. Whatever. But I feel like I might be overreacting a little bit on it just because like I wanted it to be more of like a, I don't know, Lord of the Rings OG feel, and it just didn't really have that. But how did you guys feel?
I mean, it's so hard to tell from still images. I really need to see footage before I make an assessment. You pointed out something on Twitter that made me laugh, Ken Jack, and I think it's true. We're like, this is very expensive. Like you said, $1 billion series. And yet I think maybe 1% of that budget went to these actors, because these all look like people that I don't know if they're good actors or not, but they look like community theater people. Like even in a movie that you see that doesn't have a lot of stars, there's usually one or two actors where you're like, okay, you know, I think I've seen them in something before.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of these people. And you posted the cast list and I'm like, their names sound like Lord of the Rings characters. Like in real life, I don't know who these people are. Not saying they're going to be bad. I mean, you know, sometimes unknowns can be great, but you know, that was fine. I can't really take much out of, you know, the images. It looks like Lord of the Rings, but it's those movies from 01 to 03, and it's been a long time since I've seen them, had like some of the most amazing production value of any series. Like they put so much into those movies. They need to come correct with this or else people are going to call them out. The Hobbit movies were the same way. If this looks relatively cheap, it might just detract from the entire series, to be honest with you. But I'm still holding out hope. I hope it's good.
Yeah, and those three movies only cost less than $300 million to make, which is crazy.
I am I'm disappointed right now because I don't know much about Lord of the Rings. I am I've seen probably one or two of the movies, but I was very excited for this franchise. I thought there was hope, excitement, whatever for this show. And I still am, but to hear from the mouth of Lord of the Rings diehards that they're underwhelmed by the previews or the screenshots, screen grabs, whatever you call them, still shots, is disappointing. And I wanted to ask you, how much do I need to know going into this?
I don't think a lot, because basically it takes place like a millennium before the events of the first Lord of the Rings movie. So like there's not really a lot of pretext stuff. Like they're going to talk about the big bad Sauron, who's obviously the big bad in Lord of the Rings franchise. But like other than that, I don't really think there's like a ton because everything's going to be very fresh.
OK, so that's good. Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah, I think. Oh, yeah, there you go.
The bearded thing is crazy, though. Why would they not put a beard on her if that is the identifier of elven women?
Or it's of dwarven women. And I don't know. It's like the one thing about dwarven women that everyone is like the thing. They got beards. You got to give them a beard. That's just the thing. That's part of it. And like, I mean, the kids have beards in that.
Did that exist in the original series? Like, did they in the movies? Like, did they have that?
They never showed a dwarven woman in the series. They did show in The Hobbit. I think it was Gloin's wife. And she had a beard. And there's like this drawing of her. Like, it's a thing in both the movie universe and in all the Tolkien book universe and all that. So, whatever, man. That's their choice. Aesthetic choice, I guess. Speaking of Amazon Prime series, the Blade Runner 2049 is getting a live-action sequel series at Amazon called Blade Runner 2099. Ridley Scott apparently going to executive produce it and potentially direct a couple of episodes. The showrunner is someone who hasn't really done a ton, but she's heading up some new Elizabeth Moss series, which is a good sign. I mean, if you get the green light to head up a new series with Elizabeth Moss at the lead, I think like people trust you, which is good. Yeah. What do you think about this, Chris?
You know, I'm not even like a big Blade Runner guy in general, but I don't know. I kind of think that if you're going to move forward with this universe, you need to have Denis Villeneuve attached in some capacity, because let's be honest, Blade Runner was kind of a dead franchise for a long time that nobody expected would get a sequel, and Villeneuve made this really highly, regardless of what it did financially, really highly acclaimed, well, you know, beloved sequel. And now it just kind of feels like they're milking it a little bit. I know that Ridley Scott is the executive producer. That also means very little. I mean, executive producer means you were on set for one day. And also Ridley Scott, and I know he's still directing movies, but if anyone knows anything about Ridley Scott and how he is like in interviews, he's kind of a fucking crazy person. So it's hard for me to really get like a gauge on his tastes at this point. I hope it's good the same way I hope anything is good. I love sci-fi, so I hope it works out. But I'm kind of skeptical because it just feels like they're trying to milk something that was really critically acclaimed a couple years ago.
One quick question. Why do you say live action? I read your blog. Isn't it like I think of live action as like the descriptor live action as like The Lion King is getting a live action remake. But like these were movies with people in them already. So why is it called live action?
I think they want to make sure that when you hear series that they don't think it's going to be like an animated follow-up or whatever. You could just say sequel series, really. But the way that they phrased it, I think, at Deadline is that they said live-action series. So I was just like, I'm not going to leave it open to any interpretation.
Yeah.
We're going to get a live-action.
But I'm kind of I stand on this. Kaslani, I heard you kind of just mentioned it with the Lord of the Rings stuff. I am a firm believer. Make all the fucking sequels in the world, because I think a lot of people they say that they're like, oh, it might ruin the franchise. No, it won't. That movie's still great. This is a different thing.
Yeah,
this might suck. Like I feel like that's kind of happening with Star Wars, where it was so protected for so long, and now they're like, we'll make fucking anything. Who cares? Because you might hit, you might get the Mandalorian, or you might miss, and you might get, I don't know, whatever. I'm not huge in Star Wars, but you might miss, and people kind of forget about it, and that's it, and whatever, and you try again. And so I'm take all the cuts you can. I'll watch all the Blade Runner you got.
Yeah, we talked about that when we did the West Side Story review together, where it's the idea of whether or not, you know, if you're remaking or rebooting something, the original's not going away. Like, that stuff will always be there. I'll always have the original Star Wars trilogy that cannot be, you know, beaten into the ground. Yeah.
I remember when I was younger, it was like, they're making a Caddyshack 2. It's going to ruin Caddyshack. No, it's not. Caddyshack's still hilarious. Caddyshack 2, we don't talk about it.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, like, I'm always going to be happy for, like, if they want to make a sequel to anything, give people more work. Throw money at a property, like, yeah, sure, no skin off my bones. If it sucks, I'll make fun of it. Who cares? Yeah. Like, if it's great, awesome, we're all gonna love it. And I think especially when you have someone who is like the head of the original property, like Ridley Scott, signing off on it, then double yes, that's great. I do agree with what you were saying, Chris, and that, like, Denny is the big reason why I think Blade Runner, like, kind of got a big revived interest. But, like, Ridley Scott's original is also like a benchmark in sci-fi. Ridley Scott made two of the biggest benchmark sci-fi movies ever, and that and Alien. And, like, he's like a legend in that sphere, but I also think that he has sort of, you could see in some of his recent stuff, like Prometheus and Covenant, both revivals of that he directed of his previous great horror or great sci-fi franchise in Alien, and neither of which were particularly great. Although I do stand up for Prometheus when it comes to like a full-on movie battle.
Same.
And as a counterpoint to my own counterpoint, I will also note that Ridley Scott's series on HBO Max, Raised by Wolves, I thought was pretty cool, at least so far. So, I don't know.
In your blog, I didn't even know that. I never heard that.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of like a little weird. It's got the guy from Vikings in it, Travis Fimmel? Mm-hmm. Fimmel? I don't know. But he's in, a couple other people are in it. I thought really interesting, like, android, robot interaction, human interaction stuff, like, cool, like, world building. And that's where Ridley Scott's at his best. And I think the Blade Runner universe is definitely like that could be something you could explore, and it'd be really, really cool. But also I'm afraid of, like, Amazon doing what they did with something like Wheel of Time, where they just chuck money on it and just don't care what the result is.
I've never seen an episode still, but that was one I was gassed up for. And then immediately, as soon as one person watched 1 second, they're like, does that start Liv Tyler too?
No, it's Rosamund Pike is the lead in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She has her hair dyed. I've never seen her with dark hair either. It was very jarring.
I've only seen, like, in a small little image on, like, the Amazon fucking
homepage banner.
Yeah. But I thought that was Liv Tyler.
Yeah, no, this show is just a little bit of a, I don't know. They obviously had the production value and all that, but it was just felt like a YA series, and I felt like it was primed up to be like a dramatic kind of, not game, I keep mentioning Game of Thrones with this, but it was supposed to be kind of like that, like, epic adult fantasy, whatever.
Yeah.
And actually, that sounds like a porno. That doesn't sound like what I'm trying to describe at all. The next thing we have up, the Jurassic World Dominion trailer, which I thought was, like, kind of sneakily pretty good, at least better than I originally thought it was going to be, because I did not like Fallen Kingdom at all. And I thought that this was sneaky. Like, I'm interested. I'm kind of pumped up to watch this movie now. But Fights, well, actually, we'll start with you this time. What did you think of it?
I think dinosaurs are the fucking coolest thing in the history of the world. The second this started with the snow, and we got, for some reason, Chris Pratt on a horse chasing dinosaurs, got me real gassed up. Bow and arrows got me gassed up. Laura Dern being back. People forget she used to date fucking
Baron
Davis. Laura Dern.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a short thing, but that was a great moment on Twitter.
It was so weird, dude. Everyone was like, what? Like, the internet woke up just so confused that morning. It was like her, like, kissing Baron Davis goodbye or something like that. Yep. Like, it was like, what the fuck is happening? it was very odd. But all, Sam Neill, this is one that is going to smash. And Jurassic, what was, I forget what the other one was.
Fallen Kingdom was the last one.
That was kind of garbage. But yeah. This one, I'm all the way in on this. With those two being back, fuck yes.
It's a really good trailer. I agree with you. I would say in general, since they rebooted this franchise, I don't think that I would call it more. I mean, financially, it's a success. I thought Jurassic World was good, serviceable, fine. The last one, Fallen Kingdom, that was an insane fucking movie. That was one of the most bizarre sequels, bizarre Hollywood films I've seen in a minute. Just a few observations, though, because I do think it is a good trailer. One, they're kind of going in reverse of how Star Wars and Ghostbusters revived their franchises, which is that they wait until the third movie to bring everybody back. Typically, like with other franchises, they bring the old crew back first and then kind of wane off of that and transition into new people. Secondly, though, because I think one of the big problems with this version of the Jurassic Park franchise, as opposed to the originals, is the fact that the human characters just aren't nearly as interesting. And somebody, I want to find it. I think I got it right here. Somebody on our Reddit, a guy named YurfDog, made a really interesting post that I found intriguing, which is that how neat would it have been if they would have gone about making this series the way they did Planet of the Apes, where you tell it from the point of view of the dinosaurs. Now, that would have been tough because the one thing that apes and, you know, orangutans have is the sign language, so you could use like subtitles. But I remember thinking, like, man, because what do people come to these movies to see? They come to see the dinosaurs the same way that they go to Planet of the Apes to see the fucking apes, right? I think that that could have been really cool. We're not going to get that, but I'm not sure who the director of this is, but there's some really cool shots in this trailer. Like that,
I believe it's Trevorrow again. Yeah.
Oh, is Trevorrow back? Okay. Well, that's actually surprising, because I think this looks more stylish than anything he's done. In fact, the one thing about Fallen Kingdom I did appreciate was the fact I felt like it was kind of better directed. Like, there are some pretty, you know, some interesting shot composition. There's at least one or two good action sequences, but yeah, I'm actually way more excited about this than I expected to be. Following what I thought was really just a piss poor sequel last time around with Fallen Kingdom.
Yeah, it's weird to say too, because like I thought Jurassic World was, I'm with you that I thought it was pretty solid. Okay. Jurassic World, but Fallen Kingdom is really ass. But it's weird because it's all relative. Like, I don't like either of the Jurassic Park sequels that much, to be honest. Like, especially the second one, I didn't like really at all. And it's like I would say that Fallen Kingdom, even as bad as it was, is probably better than at least the second Jurassic Park movie. But the ending of that movie with like the kid clone releasing the dinosaurs into the wild and causing near human extinction because like it's like, yeah, they're like me. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Like, they're alive. They're alive like me. Yeah.
So stupid. It was such a dumb movie. But like this one, it's just something about this trailer, man. I like it. And I also did like that idea you're talking about. Because you kind of have the communication of the dinosaurs with like Blue the Raptor from the first movie, where they were like kind of chirping at each other and shit, and like could have been something cool there. And also, never forget, and I don't know if you, I think you know this, Chris, but you probably don't fight. Trill Ballins, when he left Jurassic World, he left the movie thinking it was better than Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Really?
He's like, I left the movie and initially thought this is better than Jurassic Park. And then I watched it again and I was like, this is no, I was wrong. I was so wrong. Which is kind of funny. Next up, there was a little report from a snippet from an interview where it was revealed that Eminem almost played Mad Max, which is just one of the most bizarre stories that they got, or just bizarre hypothetical situations I could ever imagine in my life. And just the only reason he didn't want to do it is because Eminem just didn't want to go to Australia to film it. Like, he's like, I'm not leaving Michigan. I'm not going to Australia. Chris, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, this is very Michigan interesting to me, because I think Mad Max Fury Road is one of the most well-directed action movies ever. I mean, that thing, George, who won? That was 15. I'll have to go back. I don't remember who won Best Director that year, but like George Miller, I think should have been given serious consideration. Like, that was an amazing job he did. The action sequences. I have one really big problem with that movie. And I know this has weirdly become a running theme on this podcast. I think Tom Hardy kind of sucks. I don't think he's...
Oh, you're talking about fights is going to murder you for this take.
Okay, no, I'm not saying as an actor. I'm saying as Mad Max. I thought he was really, really boring. And there's a reason why Furiosa is getting a spinoff, is because she was far and away the most interesting character in that movie. And like the bringing it back full circle, Zoe Kravitz is in that, and you know, like that arc Nicholas Holt is great in that. Like, they were the interesting characters. And the only thing Tom Hardy contributed was the fucking gif of him going, you know, that's bait, that's and pointing bait. Up. Right. Like that. I think that especially when you watch the original Mad Max movies, and I know it's tough to separate art from artist with Mel Gibson. But Mel Gibson had so much charisma as Mad Max, like it, playing that role. And I feel like that was a detriment to that movie, where like you have this main actor who he's not bad. Like he's not, you know, delivering. He's not Keanu Reeves and fucking Dracula, but he's not great. And so when I heard like we wanted Eminem to do it, to be honest, I feel like that would have made some sense because there's not much dialogue there. And it, when you watch 8 Mile, which is, you know, was a vehicle for Eminem, obviously, but Eminem has these giant eyes and he does a lot of acting with his face. So I weirdly feel like he could have worked in that role. The only difference is similar to like Timberlake or Beyonce. It just would have been a distraction because you would have been watching the entire time going, that's Eminem. Like that would have been, it would have been kind of odd. He's one of those guys who reached that point of fame. David Bowie was kind of like that too, even though David Bowie, I think, was a better actor, where you just see him on screen and you're like, oh, I know that guy. I like his music. But interesting kind of theory there that George Miller was like, yeah, I'd have been all right with Eminem.
That's honestly, you kind of swayed me because when I first read this, I thought of it like J.K. Rowling describing how like X character is gay, and you're like, that's made up. You know, right, that's not, this is true. And like, I almost thought that with the Eminem thing, where it's like, no, he wasn't. This is, you're just kind of saying this. He wasn't close to being that character. But I can, when you said his acting with his face, like, you're right. I could picture like 8 Mile scenes with his eyes like big.
Yeah.
But that did take me back to Christopher North. When he was asked why he always covers half of Tom Hardy's face in all his movies, and I believe his quote was, Tom Hardy can do more with his eyes than anyone else can do with their whole body, or something like that. Mm. So that's why it makes sense that Hardy was cast as Mad Max. However, you also brought me back on your Tom Hardy's boring take, because I don't like the movie Mad Max. I think it is...
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of me and Jeff's biggest point of contingencies. But I think it's too much action. I think there's not enough like storyline. There's not enough interest, and that would make sense that the lead character isn't very interesting because I need a Fast and the Furious action movie. I need to be invested in the family, and this is just like shit is blowing up the whole time, and it didn't. I've only seen it once, so I haven't given it like a great shot. But I was pretty disappointed when I finished it.
I still like it, but I never, like, it won 5 Oscars. Like, I never understood why it became, like, this is the action movie to end all action movies. But I do think it is. I do think it is quite good. It would have been interesting with Eminem, though. That would have been weird. For Eminem to be in a movie that won 5 Oscars, that would have been fun.
And I think the story behind it is kind of funny, too, because, like, basically George Miller was working with, rest in peace, Brittany Murphy on Happy Feet. And she was just like, yeah, Eminem's a really good actor, because they were in 8 Mile together. And he's like, oh, that's enough for me. And then he goes and contacts Eminem and just see if he wants to be in this massive, like, really? I don't know how much money, like, budget action movie, $200 million action movie in Australia, which is just, it's crazy to me to think about.
That reminds me of when Fenway Sports Group first bought Liverpool and John Henry saw a viral clip. I forget what the player's name was. I forget, but it was a good player. We saw a viral clip of a player hitting like 3 targets, and he was like, we got to sign him. Here's all the money. Go get him. Just based on that one clip. And it was fake. It wasn't real. Yeah. And he ended up being like a fine player. I forget who it was. It was like one of his first moves as the owner of Liverpool. And people were like, that was a Pepsi commercial. Too.
that also reminds me with the Eminem thing. There is an alternate universe out there in which Eminem would have been in 2 big movies in summer 2015 because he was cast in Southpaw. He was going to play Gyllenhaal's role. And like that was going to be a huge like thing for him. And then he dropped out. I don't remember why.
Probably because he didn't want to leave Michigan.
But maybe, yeah. And then he just said, I'm just going to do the soundtrack for it. But how funny would that have been? That would have been Eminem's big. He would have stopped doing music after he was in fucking Mad Max and Southpaw back to back. That would have been fun.
I couldn't watch. I did the one watch of Southpaw. I couldn't do it a second. That opening scene or the is it's too hard to watch.
It's brutal.
Gyllenhaal's great in that.
Yeah.
It's kind of a cornball movie, but he fucking murders in that.
You know what? I would bet, by the way, $1 million is a movie that fights love, which just came to Netflix, Warrior.
Oh, bro. Don't even check my tweets on Warrior. I probably tweet about Warrior more than any other movie, and it makes me cry every single fucking time.
Me too, man. That's a big one.
Bro, the first time I watched it was on an airplane, I think. And you know how airplane movies go. Like, you're just, I don't know what it is, but you are more emotional when you're watching movies on an airplane. And I wept like a baby. Like, dude, I was like sniffling, like the whole thing. Not just tearing up, I was crying.
See, that's why I'm an action movie only guy when I'm on a flight. Although, if when you look at it on Space Warrior, you look at it and you're like, yeah, that's probably a good fight.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say real quick, we were talking about Gyllenhaal. I watched recently, probably 3 days ago. I don't know if it's new to Prime or it's been being recommended to me a lot recently. I finally gave in. And I haven't seen it in a while. Love and Other Drugs is a very underrated rom-com.
Yeah.
Yep.
Love and Other Drugs is great. Really, really good.
I agree. We're actually going to talk about an underrated rom-com, I think, a little bit later on. Before we get to that, though, we will talk about, and I didn't send this to you on the rundown fights, but the Lightyear trailer. Did you get a chance to see any of the new Lightyear stuff?
I have only seen kind of him getting clowned for looking too much like a cop.
He looks like a Giga Chad.
I've seen a lot of like Buzz Lightyear turns his body cam off.
that's really good. I think I posted a picture of him and just said, like, who do you know here? Because he looks like a big-ass frat bro. But Chris, what do you think about it? I know you're excited to talk about this.
I am, because when I first heard that this was being made, I thought that it was going to be something akin to Buzz Lightyear Star Command, which was a thing that came out. It was a 2D animated series that came out on VHS, or maybe it might have even been a movie. I don't know. I was really young, but I remember watching it when I was a kid. I believe Patrick Warburton may have been the voice.
Warburton was Buzz Lightyear in that,
Lightyear at the time. And those were cute. So I expected that this would be like that, like a straight to Disney Plus series or short movie. And when they showed the first teaser, this shit looked like Stanley Kubrick directed it. It's bizarrely epic. And I felt that way about the most recent trailer as well, which made me happy, because what I really hope we get soon is, and Ken, Jack, you and I were talking about it a little bit with the Toy Story movies before we started recording. There was a period of time where Pixar had a stretch, not like a long stretch, I'm talking 13 years, 15 years, where every movie they made was borderline Oscar worthy, starting with the first Toy Story, probably ending with Toy Story 3, because the movie they made after that was Cars 2, which just kind of, you know, they lost a lot of credibility there. Yeah. But it's been a minute since we've had really epic Pixar, like WALL-E, or I know Up is kind of a quaint story, but it felt epic when you're watching it, or Toy Story 3. So I really hope that they like return to form with this, because this has got money behind it and it's got a cast behind it. And I like the fact that it's really taking itself pretty seriously. I think it looks really good. This is shockingly one of my more anticipated movies of the year, just because I'm intrigued by it. Maybe it'll be good, maybe it'll be bad, but it looks pretty huge.
Yeah, and they just actually talked about how Taika Waititi got added to the cast too, which already includes Chris Evans, Kiki Palmer, a couple other people as well. That's huge. I mean, anything Taika Waititi touches, I'm immediately in on, because he's just so goddamn funny.
Did you see his Instagram post about it?
No, I didn't. What did he put?
He just put a picture of the poster and he's like, well, I guess I'm in this, I guess.
He's just so funny. But I agree with you. It looked like very epic. It reminds me, and I had set the original trailer to the Doom soundtrack because it looks like Doom.
I know.
It's so weird. It has like that same sort of like style book or whatever, but it's very interesting. The next thing we have up, speaking of outer space shit, the Adam Project, starring Ryan Reynolds, Zoe Saldana, Mark Ruffalo, Jennifer Gardner. Like, it seems interesting in the fact that like Ryan Reynolds, like in almost anything, is interesting. And like, at least like, even if he's playing the same character, I don't give a shit. He's one of those guys, and we've talked about this with the Ryan Reynolds effect. He can keep playing that same sarcastic asshole-ish guy side of slightly charming, whatever. He could play that same character in every single movie, and I would not care, because I still like it.
Yeah,
I agree with that. I like Ryan Reynolds. I'm waning a bit. I do think he's not as funny as we give him credit for. Whereas, like, I still think of him as, like, he's still his humor is still the same as it was in Blade 3.
Trinity, yeah.
Trinity, yeah. When he calls, I forget, the evil woman, a cock-juggling thunder cunt. And it was funny then. And I don't think there's been much of a progression. And it's still, it's fine. He's like, I like Ryan Reynolds. I do. I like him as a person. But I think his character, it's waning a bit. I'll still see it. However, seeing this trailer, I almost wrote a letter to Netflix where I was like, how little do you respect me? what the fuck am I watching? And I think that with almost every Netflix movie, I watch it and get angry at how little they respect me as a movie watcher, that they feed me this slop and tell me to eat it up and say, oink, oink, while I eat it. And I do every time, and it makes me upset. And this kind of had the same vibes as that to me. Where it's like, what is? I'll watch it, but what the fuck?
I get that. There's the only reasons why I'm excited for it is one, I like the throwback vibes that it has. I mean, it looks very kind of old school 80s Spielbergian with the, I don't know, there's just kind of a whimsical vibe to it. But also, it's directed by Sean Levy.
Yep.
And starring Ryan Reynolds, who just made Free Guy, which I loved. It was one of my favorite movies of last year. And if they can capture that kind of vibe, because the one thing about Free Guy that worked in a way that I did not expect it to is the fact that movie has like good heart to it and good characters, yeah, and an honest message. If you can recapture that with a movie like this, I really think it could work. Ryan Reynolds, he's got to be one of the most well-liked actors in Hollywood because people forget how much garbage he's been in. I mean, he's been in a lot of shit. I mean, prior to Deadpool,
mm-hmm,
he went about 10 years. I'm not talking about Buried or something like those small projects, but he went about 10 years where his mainstream stuff was ass. I mean, X-Men Origins, Green Lantern. I mean, he made a lot. What was the one that he did with Ben Kingsley? Like Selfless.
Yeah. Selfless.
R.I.P.D. I mean, he made
pretty good. Hang on, I'm gonna defend Selfless. I like Selfless.
I never saw it, but I know it got ripped. And R.I.P.D. was really bad as well.
R.I.P.D. stunk. Oh my god.
Yeah. But he's so likable that people just kind of forgive him, and he seems like he's found his way back. I hope this works. It looks cute.
He is. It is crazy. I remember I was reading, this is a while back, I think it was a GQ piece on him where he was talking about how, to your point, Chris, prior to Deadpool, he was like, I'm not a leading man. That's okay. He's like, I it's clear I am not blockbuster material. And he said he had come to peace with that, where he's like, yeah, I'll just be a bit guy. I will not be a major actor because clearly I cannot make this work. And then Deadpool happened and obviously, mm-hmm, the rest is history.
And it works. It just needs to be in the right spot. And that's something where I think it worked really well with Free Guy. It's just like the vibe of that movie, basically, it's not that loud. It's fine. It's a little car horn action. I think part of the reason why it works so well in something like Free Guy is like, essentially, that movie appeals really well to like multiple bases. Like, it appeals to like, if you're like watching this with your kid or whatever, or you're just a kid watching this, you can enjoy Free Guy. If you're like an adult, there's plenty of humor for you there too. And like, it can really just, it reaches everywhere. And like, I think that combination of Levy and Reynolds is very, very good, and just mm-hmm, like a strong group. And just really like them a lot as a combo. The next up, there is going to be a Futurama reboot. This is mostly just for me. I know maybe you guys don't even really care about
it. I've never seen Futurama, so I'll let you take this.
And then, yeah, so yeah. I'll run on this then. And there's a Futurama reboot at on Hulu. So I'm kind of torn on how to feel about this. And mostly I'm just going to say I'm very much out on this because John DiMaggio is apparently not reprising his role as Bender. They have everyone else, but like Bender is very much like a heart and soul of that show. And if you don't get, and he has such a very distinct voice that like, I don't think you could replace him and really get away with it. I think that Futurama is a series that ended on a perfect note, about as perfect as you could ask for. And also when they moved from Fox to Comedy Central, and they had to switch a lot of like their writing group up and stuff like that, the show, I think, took a remarkably, not a remarkable, but a pretty big turn for the worse as far as like the quality of the show went. And just adding them to Hulu for a revival season, I just don't, it's one of those things that can be talked about like a trillion times already. Like, is it necessary? Probably not. Could it be good? Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. I want these guys getting more work. I love Futurama. It's the show I watched more than any other show ever. And like, I would love for this cast to get more work, make more money. Sure. Yeah. But also I still have mixed feelings on it. I don't know. Fights, do you ever watch Futurama?
Never seen it. No. So it's actually a perfect time for me to have to mute myself.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it. I guess we could just end it on there then. So I'll just say I'm not totally thrilled about that. And the last piece of news, we had the first trailer for Jordan Peele's new movie, Nope. The trailer, it was very hard to determine what exactly was happening in it, but it's a sci-fi Western horror movie that follows residents of an isolated town who witness a mysterious and abnormal event. It stars Daniel Kaluuya, Kiki Palmer, Steven Yeun, a couple other people as well.
Is that Kiki Palmer? I couldn't place it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So very good cast, very acclaimed cast. Bunch of Oscar nominees just from like the recent 5 years and Oscar winners. Jordan Peele's a guy who really just hasn't missed yet, and he has like a very, we were talking about this before the pod too, Chris, a very distinct style where you can immediately tell it's something that he's doing.
Yeah.
I couldn't totally tell what was happening in this trailer, but I almost like that. And you can almost refer to our conversation earlier about trailers. Like, I like not knowing what's going on. Right. I don't like predicting stuff. Chris,
would you agree? And even Jordan Peele just does weird shit that is fucking cool. Like, it's such a benefit to just be a cool person. Rather than there's so many like directors who are like artistic or this or that, like Jordan Peele's just fucking cool. And this, and like it was something as little as how it dropped down. It was like from Jordan Peele, and it was almost reversed. And I was like, even this is fucking cool. Just the way it, like this came into play was cool. The line that Daniel
Kaluuya,
Kaluuya. The line he delivers with it's like a miracle, but it's a bad thing. Is there a word for that? That's a great line. Mm. And that like just that right there sold me 100% on the show. I'm like, oh, a movie. I'm like, yeah, that's a cool, it's a great thought. Or you're right. There isn't really a word for like a bad thing, but a miracle.
Mm. It's so bizarre to me that it's taken Jordan Peele 3 movies, and yet when he makes a movie, it's an event now. Like, there's maybe 5 directors in Hollywood you could say that about. Like, Scorsese, Nolan, Tarantino, Spielberg, and maybe James Cameron and Jordan Peele. Every time he makes what's up, Fights?
Sorry, you just said Christopher Nolan, and it made me realize that earlier I said Christopher Knopf.
I
thought you said Northman, and I was like, who?
Yeah. No, it was Christopher Nolan.
But sorry. But like his movies feel big now, and I think that's really cool. And I'm actually in the minority where I think his films have gotten better. I like Us way more than I like Get Out, and I know I'm really in a small minority about that. Get Out is insanely well directed. I still think it's a little bit silly in the third act, but Us, I thought, was pretty amazing and gorgeously shot. And I think that we're going to have that here with this. Yeah, I think this is probably going to be one of the better movies of the year. I love his style as a director. Ken, Jack, you and I were talking about it before we started recording. I just love his arc as a person, that this is the guy who was doing, you know, was doing the Continental Breakfast sketches and was doing the
Mad TV.
On Mad TV, and he was doing the college football all-star game. You know, he was Ladarius Nefarious. And now all of a sudden this is like a dignified big time Hollywood director. And I think that's awesome. And he's a writer, and he has an actual visual style with so many directors seem to lack nowadays. So I'm all in on this. I think this is going to be really good.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I agree with you in that. I don't know if I could say Us is better than Get Out, but I think like it is. She showed a lot of progression as a director with a lot of stuff he did in Us, as a writer, I guess, as well, too. Very, very good movie. Yeah, so I think that one, it's hard to explain because like there's so little to really pick up on other than like you got the good feel for what the movie's going to look like, which is very much like the rest of this stuff as far as like, you know, get a little bit of darkness, great shots, like really mysterious sort of progression in characters and stuff like that. And I love that. And now I want to watch the college football name introduction skit again, because that is still so funny.
They're timeless. Yeah, they're great.
So goddamn funny. One last thing before we get into our Kimmy review. The Book of Boba Fett had its finale. We could just give our quick thoughts. I know, Fights, I don't think you finished it or even watched it, maybe. But yeah, maybe you can give me and Chris our quick thoughts. I like the finale a lot. And I think that the one thing that sucks for this series, which I thought was good overall, is that the enduring legacy of it is going to be, well, it's actually a Mando series. It's an extended Mando series. Right. And to that, I just say, who cares? Like, I don't really care if I see more Mando than I do Boba in the series, because I'm being entertained. And that's what the show is for. And it's all this big symbiotic Star Wars universe that they're building. And I don't care if they do these crossover episodes where Boba's not involved. Does not matter, because I enjoyed the episode. I'm not going to complain about it. But Chris, what did you think?
I didn't care for the series, to be honest with you. I was not a fan of it. I would say, to me, Solo is the worst Star Wars product maybe ever, but it's definitely the worst since Disney bought Lucasfilm. This is second to me, because its biggest problem, it's just so goddamn boring. I just find the characters to be really uninteresting. And it's bizarre, but it was necessary that they just hijacked the series for two episodes and put Mando in there, because those were far and away the two best episodes. This to me was the worst case scenario for what I thought a Boba Fett series would be, which is that, like, okay, Boba Fett was really cool in a movie that came out 40 years ago for 5 minutes. I don't think he's actually interesting enough to carry what is this? Like 5 hours total. Like, I don't think he's actually that unique or refreshing. Not to say the performance is bad, but you are reminded during this series, when you see Mandalorian, when you see Pedro Pascal as Mando, that character has emotions and an arc and has some really interesting stuff going on. And I don't think Boba Fett is that interesting of a character. And also, there's really not much of a story here. I mean, the story doesn't kick in until the very, very end. The only cool character that they introduced, or I guess reintroduced, because he was in Clone Wars, is Cad Bane. And they kill him off. He was great. Then they shoot his ass. And so, like, I'm not crazy about this. I was not a fan of it. I think it's cool that people are liking it, but I'm not. Yeah, it did nothing for me, man. It made me upset, because I wanted to like it. I binge watched it this week, and the other cool characters too. And guess what? They kill him too. So that was a little bit frustrating. But it doesn't take away from my excitement for Mando season 3. I still think it's going to be really good, and I like Star Wars on television. But well, kinda. I like Mando. I miss the days when Star Wars was an event. Now, like, you can just turn on your laptop and it's Star Wars. But if it's good, it's good. And Mando was great. So this was a misfire, but it doesn't detract from the direction I feel like the series is going in. Because I do think that, in general, Mandalorian was great. So I want to see more stuff like this.
Yeah, I think the way I ended on it was just that the problem with Boba Fett is that what our collective vision of what Boba Fett should be is the Mandalorian. Yeah. So, like, you can't just do that twice. And, like, so they had to make him a little bit different. They had to make him a little more vocal. And he's supposed to be, like, the stoic badass. And they couldn't really do that. And I think just from a technical standpoint, the only thing they didn't do particularly well was just some of the storyline, like explaining why Mandalorian is doing what he is, why he wants to be a crime lord, why he wants to do these things. I don't think they expounded on that quite enough. But I still think it's a net positive, because I was entertained for most of this series, which is better than not being entertained at all by no Star Wars content. And we're getting Kenobi in May. So, I mean, right. It all kind of, we have more stuff to look forward to. Okay, so before we get to our Kimmy interview, we're going to really quick. We had a discussion with Scott Eastwood from the movie I Want You Back. Second time, two-time recurring guest, Scott Eastwood. Very interesting conversation. We talk a little bit about his movie. We talk a little bit about Fast and Furious franchise and where it's going for the two-part finale. And a little bit about Westerns, too, and his dad and stuff, which is always fun. But yeah, here's Scott Eastwood.
All right. Let's welcome back for the second time to LCB, Scott Eastwood. What's going on? How's everything going?
Good. I'm here in California doing some work, enjoying this pretty pleasant California weather.
It's pretty nice out, and we got a lot to talk to you about, but let's talk right off the top about I Want You Back, new movie, big time rom-com vibes and energy. You can tell us all about it, but I'll give you the description. Peter and Emma have each been left by their respective partners. The two decide to team up to win their exes back by destroying their new relationships. Prime Video, February 11th. You got some funny, funny people in this movie.
Yeah, man. It was a real treat to get to work with comedians of that caliber. Jenny Slate, Charlie Day, Gina, just this is what they do, you know, especially Jenny Slate and Charlie Day. They're so good at their craft that it made it just really fun for me. You know, I got to come in there, do my thing. And what else I can say, man, they're just rock stars.
This is a comedic role for you, which is not the norm, but what was that experience like? Is there like a little bit of a comedic flair that you were excited to finally like pop off in a movie and showcase a bit?
Yeah, 100%. You know, you want to explore all different kinds of genres. And I had done a kind of a small indie comedy years and years ago. And when I did it, I had so much fun doing it. Although the movie didn't turn out that great, I just had a really fun experience doing it. So I was always looking for and trying actively to, you know, find the right thing, find something that, you know, the right for me in it.
Yeah. So this is the same director, the same mind behind Big Time Adolescence, which I'm sure it's a movie that I know at least a lot of our audience has seen before. He's a guy like I think that is proof that he can, you know, make comedy. And like I think he also has a very good like artistic spin on it, so to speak. And I think you kind of get that vibe when you watch the trailer for this movie. Did you get that sense, though, while you were making it, that this was like obviously just a little bit more than your average rom-com?
Yes, I did. Jason Burley is a fantastic young director. That Big Time Adolescence movie, I watched and was very impressed. So I knew right away the guy had talent, he had an eye, and his, I say, inspiration for this movie and the message that he kept saying during filming, and what he really was trying to do in this film, I think he succeeded at, was he was trying to make a movie like When Harry Met Sally. He was trying to, you know, find this grounded humor with this through line of real heart and soul through the movie. And like you said, I think over delivers on that. I haven't seen a rom-com like this since the 90s. So for me, it was, you know, just, he's the guy. We're going to see a lot more from him.
Yeah. In general, you mentioned rom-coms. Like, I feel like we've had some good ones. Don't get me wrong. There've been some good ones, but traditional rom-coms, like you don't get as many of those 90 feeling ones. And this one has like a specific vibe to it. Like if you're listening, you've not seen the trailer, watch it. You know what we're talking about right off the bat. What sold you on this? So like you just said, is it that like, oh, this feels like a rom-com of old. Like this has something that I'm used to. Like I know from like back in the day almost.
Yeah. Look, I mean, what people don't tell you is film is a director's medium. It's great. You got to have good actors. You got to have a great cast, all those things, but the director's really in charge of making those decisions and making those hires. From the top down. And so just having somebody with a steady hand that sees the vision from start to finish is what's going to make the difference, you know, in a movie that, you know, is a fine movie to watch or something, but something that could really, you know, sort of make its mark in history.
Mm-hmm. I read something recently just about like cinematographers and stuff and other people that surround the job of a director. And like a lot of people kind of have a misinterpretation of what a director does, but like the director's vision, right? Like that's what everyone's working on. And like, if they can't execute that and can't help the people around them execute that, then it wouldn't matter if he has the best idea in the world, it would still suck. Like, it's just like, you need to be able to work in like kind of manage all these things like happening at once, which is kind of funny. Cause I think we interviewed a director who said that being a director is almost like being a glorified PA, because you're essentially just like managing everything. Like it's not as like maybe as flowery as some people imagine.
Yeah, everyone's coming at you. Everyone's pulling at you for decisions all day long. This department, that department. What do you want to do here? Wardrobe, set, you know, set decoration. How do you want it to look? Location. Lighting, you know, you're just like you said, you're fielding all these decisions, but they're very important. All those decisions you make, you know, if you make quality decisions, those decisions kind of add up to the sum of the whole. And if you pay attention to the details and you're, you know, you sort of, you stay true to what you want, then, you know, it turns out to be usually a pretty good movie.
You mentioned rom-coms before. Do you have like a, let's say a top group of favorite rom-coms, like When Harry Met Sally or anything like that, that you consider like the benchmark for the genre, like what you want to reach?
Sure. Yeah. I think When Harry Met Sally, it, you know, definitely top five. Would say Overboard's in there. I would say probably a couple Matt McConaughey early 2000s are in there. Ghost of Girlfriend's Past is a good one. It's kind of a slightly more obscure one that I really enjoyed. He's got another five in there that are probably all pretty good.
No, I think that's a great selection. And like we mentioned before, this is like a very awesome cast of extremely funny people. I mean, specifically Charlie Day and Jenny Slate. I know a lot of our audience has seen like a trillion different comedic projects that they've been involved with. I mean, just knowing them, and like I've watched like a trillion It's Always Sunny and like Broad City Bloopers, stuff like that. There had to be funny bloopers and off-camera moments with them, right?
All day. That's all they do. They're so good at riffing and going off the cuff and balancing what you give them, what they take, what they don't. It's a real skill. And when you have great partners like them, you know, it makes, for me, it's easy because you come in and you know, don't know what you're going to get. And you just got to sort of be in the moment, but they really make you better.
Who is, maybe it's one of them, who is the funniest person that you've acted with? The one person that no matter what, they you just couldn't stop laughing.
Well, I think off camera, Gina Rodriguez makes me laugh a lot. She's a firecracker. On camera, it's probably one of those two. It's probably Jenny Slate or Charlie Day. It's probably a close tie, I would say. They both have a different sense of humor.
It's funny. I was almost expecting it to be like an off the cuff answer. Like, yeah, Caleb Landry Jones. Like, man, that guy, he had the whole place in stitches every day while we're shooting this one.
No, absolutely not. No, he's a great guy. He's a much more serious actor. I don't know if he ever made me laugh.
He's a very, very serious. He's one of those guys that just assumes
he's a great guy. Nonstop. Great guy. He's a great guy. He's just not. He's not the Charlie Days of the world. That guy's just hysterical.
That's fair. That's fair. Reminder: I want you back. Prime Video, February 11th. We got to talk a little big franchise stuff here. Fast and Furious 10. I'm sure you can't tell us anything, but I mean the sky. They were in space. I mean, space in the last one. Like, what? The sky is the limit. Like, what are we breaking open the multiverse here? We're going to get other car movies. Like, what is even, like, what can we even do here?
That's a good question. Look, I think, like you said, these movies are great. They're fun. They're multicultural. They're global. And they're important. They're important for, I think, you know, although they're giant popcorn movies, have a place where everyone gets to see themselves as a character, relate to one or the other. And I think that's really cool, you know, that the what these sort of have, the franchise has morphed into. It's, I didn't see it going that way. You know, when I saw the first Fast and the Furious, did I see it turning into this? Not in a million years. I would have told you crazy if you told me it was going to be the biggest global multicultural, multiracial movie that sort of, you know, spans over two decades. But it's amazing what they've done.
went from what, boosting combination DVD Panasonic TV players to going into space. It's insane the how far that franchise has gone. And I know we asked you actually about franchises last time, just like if there's any you wanted to join, but I want to officially start our own petition because we've been pretty successful at this. We've been pretty successful in sort of like rallying people around getting an actor cast in something and them actually becoming cast in it. J.K. Simmons in Spider-Verse, in the last Spider-Man movie, great example. We want to start our own petition, and I want it to be, of all the franchises out there, I would love to see you in Mission Impossible. And would that be something you're interested in?
Oh, of course. I mean, look, those are, I mean, that's something I, you know, I grew up on, Mission Impossible. I mean, Ethan Hunt, what a badass, you know? It's just, those are also really fun, big global movies that I will always go to the theater to see.
Mm-hmm. Give us and this is what we did last time with JK, and this is, I think, something that helps out. Can you give us your most menacing read of a good Mission Impossible line? And I have one. It's, there cannot be peace without first a great suffering. That's from the last Mission Impossible. Can you give us a good menacing line read of that?
There can't be peace first a great suffering.
Oh, there's pain in that. I loved it.
You are.
I don't know who said that, but was that was that Tom Cruise?
I think it was. Who's the bad guy?
Sound like Tom Cruise line.
It was the bad guy. I forget his.
It was both of them. It was
the character's name.
But now you've just signed yourself up to get your ass kicked by Ethan Hunt, though. You're not going to be Ethan Hunt's side. You're going to get, you're going to have to die at some point in the movie, I guess. I want to talk Westerns quick before we're going to play a little game here with you. But Ken Jack, I know you want to talk about Westerns. You can get into that.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's a genre where people are sort of gravitating back to it in all forms, you know, like traditional, obviously, but also space Westerns. You see Mandalorian is like the biggest show on the planet. Neo-Westerns, like I've been, I think, some of the most highest rated movies over the last like 10 years. You obviously have like a little bit of a familiar connection there. But what do you think it is that draws people to Westerns as a genre?
Simplicity. The simplicity is of the stories, you know. Whether they're a post-apocalyptic, whether they are in space, whether they're, you know, in the old West. I think the thematic themes of revenge, betrayal, you know, justice, these things are at core very, very, you know, they're just based in human nature, right? And I think we like to see these things in a simplistic way play out. And since historically, if you look back through film history, they've historically become popular, unpopular. It just seems to be kind of the nature of the business. They're heat-seeking missile, right? When they start working, they have studio executives who people know are like, we got to make more Westerns. They're working, you know? And then, you know, then they don't, maybe something doesn't work or something. And then people say, oh, Westerns are dead. The reality is, I don't think they're ever dead. It's just, you know, at what point in time, you know, we'll start making them and they get popular again. And, you know, sort of, I think, what happens.
It's funny because Ken Jack mentioned The Mandalorian, like the Book of Boba Fett. They just introduced a longtime animated Star Wars character, and it was an absolute, by somebody in full LeBron James garb just behind me, by the way. That's just what we're doing this week. We
a lot of weird stuff happening.
What a cameo. They introduced the character, and it was such an homage to The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, obviously, your connection there. And it's just like, it's crazy, no matter what it is, Star Wars, like there's so much Western stuff. If you could have a dream Western for either you to star in or direct, who would you want to direct your Western, or who would you want to star in your Western if you could make your dream one?
Wow. That's a great question.
I think it's twofold. I would say the Westerns that have impacted me the most are at the beginning of my father's career, which was Good and the Ugly, the spaghetti Westerns,
mm-hmm.
or any of the three Sergio Leone movies, really. And at the end of my father's Western career, which was Unforgiven. And if I was making my own Western, I think selfishly, it would be pretty amazing to see my dad come back for one last ride. Maybe it should end in probably the greatest Western ever made, which I think was Unforgiven. Mm-hmm.
True.
But I don't know, you know, there's a lot of great actors out there. A lot of guys who can do Westerns well. Christian Bale, Idris Elba just did a great, Idris Elba just did, you know, first time I've seen him in a Western. Denzel. A lot of really good actors. I don't know. Maybe throw them all in there together.
Let's we're going to throw a little game here at the end. We, our other podcast we do a movie podcast on Sundays, and then on Wednesdays and Thursdays we do a bracket, and we'll pick random topics. We're going to do a bracket with you right now. We're going to do a bracket of just Scots. All right, we're going to do a Scots bracket. And we're going to pick it off the cuff. Just give us your pick. First one up, Scotland versus Scottsdale, Arizona. Better Scott.
Scotland. Duh. Come on.
Easy one seed. Okay.
Not a fan of the retiree community of Scotland.
Well, no, it's good. You got St. Andrews, you got the old course, you got golf, and you got birthplace of Braveheart, you know. You'll live for a while.
Scottsdale's good. It's, you know, bachelor parties too. Scotland makes sense. Next one, fake characters. You got Scott Lang, Ant-Man, or Scott Calvin, Tim Allen as Santa in the Santa Claus.
Oh, wow. I think I'm going to go Scott Calvin, Santa Claus.
Yeah.
It's Santa. Come on.
You don't want coal this year, obviously.
Kendrick, you Santa. Take the next one.
Oh, yeah. We got Travis Scott versus Ridley Scott. I think this is probably the hardest matchup there is on the planet.
I'm going to have to go with Ridley Scott.
That's not very sicko mode of you. I don't like that at all.
No, it's not.
I'm going to have to turn the interview off after that. All right. The big one. Here we go, Ken Jack.
Oh, yeah. This is huge. Yourself versus Scott Kahn.
Man, it's so tough. Scott Kahn, when he was like Ocean's 11, Scott Kahn?
Yes.
Or Scott, yeah, it's not like Hawaii 5-0 Scott Kahn. We're talking Ocean's 11.
Okay, Scott Kahn, Ocean's 11. No,
you're gonna allow yourself to be upset there in the 7-2?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, a good upset from time to time in the bracket.
Who's your champion out of the final four here? Scotland, Santa, Ridley Scott, and Scott Kahn.
Oh, it's got to go. It's got to go Ridley Scott, and it's got to go Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott in Scotland get to the finals, and then Ridley Scott. No, Scotland takes it.
Okay.
Too much history. Too much history.
Because Ridley Scott is not even Scottish, which is like the biggest upset ever. I mean, that's kind of messed up. We have a guy named David England, and he's be Scottish. It's messed up.
Yeah, it's jacked up.
Last thing here, reminder, Prime Video, February 11th. I want you back. Check it out. We asked you last time for six movies, but maybe let's say they did Oscar noms today. Give us six movies that you've maybe seen. It doesn't have to be from last year's releases, but something you saw in the last year, maybe six movies that sparked your interest. You want more people to go out and see.
Six. Okay. Six is a lot, but I'm going to tell you a couple are definitely outliers. They're awesome. I'll tell you two from last year. Coda.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
great movie. Got me hooked up. Really, really well done. And then I really enjoyed Dune.
Yeah,
really enjoyed it. I watched it twice back to back. I turned it immediately on right after I watched it the first time. And then I watched it another time. So I've seen it three times now. And a movie that didn't get enough love a couple of years ago, Captain Fantastic.
Yeah.
Great movie.
With Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Yeah. That's a great pick. Dune. I saw Dune in IMAX four times. So I'm right up there.
Right. You saw four times? Wow. It's so good.
We have Ken Jack and I, the theater we go to in Manhattan, it's the biggest IMAX at a theater chain in the world. So like, how can you not? Like, if it's there, you got to just keep, you know, you got to keep
going. I love that.
Finally, last thing here, February 11th, right? That's right. I mean, perfect movie. Give us the final pitch. Perfect movie for Valentine's Day time. February 11th, I want you back. Actually, if you're listening right now, it is out already. Give us one final pitch for the movie.
Elevator pitch. How far will you go to get some back?
Ah, beautiful. Tell you, man, you do really good delivery of that pain in the voice every time. Both line range you gave us.
Oh my God. Thank you so much, man. This is an absolute blast again. And now, and congrats to Scotland for winning the Scott Eastwood Scott bracket. That's a huge.
I love the Scots. They're great.
Thank you so much. Good luck with the movie. And hopefully talk to you soon.
Same. Do it on the next.
Of course.
Yes, exactly. We'll do an East bracket next time or something.
I like that.
Okay, so that was Scott Eastwood. Very, very cool interview. I think his movie I watched last night, I Want You Back, it's on Prime Video. It is one of the more, like, I'd say impressive rom-coms I've seen in a long time. So I'm the same guy who directed Big Time Adolescence and has a couple cameos from people from that as well. Very, very, like, understatedly funny. Charlie Day and Jenny Slater in it. A couple other great people. I know you're a big fan of them, right, Fights?
I watched the other night with my parents. Very good. Loved it. My dad really loved it. But I thought it was... I watched it, then I watched Belfast right afterwards, and it was kind of unfair to I Want You Back. I Want You Back is very good for what it is.
Yes.
It's not Belfast.
Yeah, it's weird. He's really good at like these well-shot rom-coms. It's really rare you see that, because usually rom-coms are like, they're very, very set in how they're done. They're like kind of, you know, goofy and rounded edge, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But like, this is just a well-shot, interesting story. Got some heart, got some plenty of laughs.
You know who it took me a long time to place, but a couple of scenes. Fucking what's his name from A Good Place?
Yeah, Manny Jacinto. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took me for a minute on that too. But yeah, really cool interview. So let's talk about Kimmy. So Kimmy was on HBO Max. If you haven't watched it yet, don't listen to this, because we're going to talk about spoilers with this entire movie. It's about an agoraphobic tech worker that discovers recorded evidence of a violent crime, is met with resistance when she tries to report it. She now must try to do the right thing and what she fears most, leave her apartment. It's kind of like a real world adaptation of like some stuff that's happened with like Alexa and stuff like that, with Alexa mm-hmm. recording crimes. This is, I thought, a very interesting movie that takes a little bit of a late nosedive. It's very, I don't want to break down too much. I'll go last on this. But Chris, let's start with you. What did you think of Kimmy?
Well, I turned this movie on and I was in a shitty mood, which does actually matter sometimes.
When it comes to a shocking amount.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll start talking about something. And I'll be like, wait, I just wasn't happy when I was watching it.
Yeah.
It's disturbing how much it matters.
Like, I just watched Michigan clank a million 3-pointers against Ohio State. Baseball all but confirmed was about to be delayed. It's Michigan in the winter, so the color palette is gray and shitty. So I turn this on. I'm like, what is this shit? Fucking Zoe Kravitz's blue hair. You know what? I like this movie. It's not amazing. I don't think it's incredible. It's not, you know, it's a mild, mild recommendation. Like, I have it at a 66 out of 100, which I know is going to drive people nuts. But that's almost a 7 out of 10. Like, that's a nice little movie. It works for two reasons. One, I like the way Steven Soderbergh directs his movies. I think that I brought it up with Jordan Peele. He's another director who you can tell when you're watching a Steven Soderbergh movie.
For sure.
And he's very versatile. Sometimes he'll film shit with an iPhone. He loves his fisheye lenses. Sometimes he has like the red palette to his movies. And I think that here, the way he films like the agoraphobic sequences and the way he films Zoe Kravitz's character, it's stylistic, but it's unglamorous. There's a nude scene in this movie with Zoe Kravitz, and yet it's not, at no point is anything like sexualized. It feels very grounded in reality. And the second reason this works is Zoe Kravitz.
The sex scene wasn't sexualized.
No, not at all. Yeah.
The sex scene with a beautiful person like Zoe Kravitz was bizarrely not sexual. And it wasn't like graphic or violent or anything like that. It was just like, this isn't sexy, despite Zoe Kravitz having sex right now.
Right. Well, because part of it is that it takes place like in the heart of COVID. Yeah. And an agoraphobic person during COVID is a nightmare. But at the same time, you got to come. And so she's like, it was like the way it was filmed. The way it was filmed is just like, all right, let's get this shit over with, and then move on.
It was but very was clear that neither of them did. It was. I noticed that watching. I was like, this is weird. Like, neither of them finished.
But she's great in this. I'm not like it's not award worthy, but I think what I liked about her character in this, and what I liked about this movie. And Ken Jack, we both hated this film. This is what The Woman in the Window should have been. It's almost the same story and same main character, agoraphobic, germophobic main character who discovers something that you know, might be, in this case, it's a sexual assault and the other, I'm not going to give anything away, but they discover something that is out of the ordinary and want to do something about it. The difference is everything about Woman in the Window felt so phony and lame. Here, Zoe Kravitz really carries this and fights you. You talked about it earlier, but like Zoe Kravitz is gorgeous, right? But the way she plays this role, it's like she plays it the way like a character actor would. And outside of just the blue hair, I feel like it's clear. I got the impression that the way she read this script and really was very meticulous with a lot of her tics and quirks outside of the agoraphobia. You could tell that there was almost like an OCD element to her character, and even just the way that she responds to people, almost like an Asperger's-y kind of thing to her character. I think there's these little subtleties to her performance that are actually pretty brilliant. Now, my complaints, I think, are probably going to be your complaints, Ken Jack, which is, and this happens so often in thrillers where you have a really good setup and then you get to the third act and shit gets fucking ridiculous, and that's kind of what happens here. I'm not a huge fan of the conclusion, but I give it a mild recommendation. It's a February HBO Max release. This could have been so much worse, and it's watchable. It's good. I actually do recommend on a weekend to put on HBO Max and give this a watch. I enjoyed it.
You swayed me to an extent there. I did not like it. And, okay. But there was. Zoe was great, and she's basically the only character in the movie, the only main character. Mm-hmm. So her being great definitely does a lot for the movie. But I didn't. Soderbergh pissed me off sometimes, being too Soderberghy. Like the kombucha scene. It's like, yes. I see it. It's halfway off the table. It's gonna fall. Let's just skip to that part. And it was. And then when it fell, it was like. That annoyed me. She's like, you already told me it was gonna fall. But the thing that didn't sit well with me, the third act is a mess. I literally laughed out loud at one point. When the guy he's trying to get when she's firing fucking nail guns from the ceiling and he's trying to get help, and the guy like it's the first time he ever acted. He goes, I've been stabbed, asshole. Was such a weird line. Like the whole thing sucked, but the larger issue than that, I don't get the stories, because why is the company trying so hard to cover it up?
You would think, right, that they would be more, at least especially the sort of the chain that she went through.
Yeah, I get why Brad doesn't want it out, but why is it company policy to not report these things when I get if it was recording her privately. She turned it on both times. She said, "Can you record?" So it was doing its job. It wasn't like listening in on some, you know, when it wasn't supposed to be listening. It was doing its job. So why would it be such a hassle to report this and call the FBI?
I think part of it, and this is what I'm assuming drew Soderbergh to the story, is like there's a lot of gray area as far as like privacy issues. So it's like. Yeah. These tech companies, like where, like they're listening in on you. You don't like that. And also,
but she told it to.
But that's what I'm saying is like they I think there's kind of like a sort of gray spot here where it's like you don't want this thing listening in on you until you do, but also like the PR of that is a little bit of a nightmare. So like you know what I mean? Like you want to be able to solve a murder, but you also don't want this thing listening into you while you're talking with someone at home. So correct. Like that's I guess kind of the part here.
If they just eliminate that those two lines where she says Kimmy record before both situations, then I'm fine. Then I understand the confusion. But this was a direct instruction to record and report something that you know goes to a human person. That's how this thing is marketed, that human people are listening to it. So yeah. It's like it wouldn't make sense to me that they wouldn't solve this crime.
So her job, Kimmy's – or not Kimmy's job. Oh, my God. I forgot her name. What was her name? Zoe Kravitz's name in this. I forgot. Sharon? Something? Finesse? Shit. I'm so stupid. Alicia?
It was Angela.
Yeah. So, like, her job was, like, whenever Kimmy would have, like, a functional problem, they would report that, and a human would listen to that. They wouldn't listen to every single command that was given. So, like, when that girl recorded that – assault and recorded him like saying he was going to kill her and all that stuff, like that was essentially like stored not for to be listened to anywhere. Like it wasn't meant to be shared with like a tech worker or like a Kimmy worker or whatever else like that. So them doing like listening to it was an invasion of privacy, so to speak. So I think just in my feelings on it, I ended up giving this movie and what'd you give it, John? What would you say out of 100?
Fifty-eight.
Okay, so you guys are close to the same ballpark. I'm giving it somewhere closer to like a 76. I'll say.
Wow.
Because I did like a lot about this movie, not all of it, because I do think it takes a huge nosedive. It could have been way better. I think Kravitz was awesome, and I think the character she's playing, and I like how you described it as character acting. Like, it's really, really weird, neurotic character, and I think she nailed that. And that almost feel of like when she's talking to people and she's being rude, but you can tell it's not because she wants to be rude. It's just like she feels boxed in by her own issues and her own problems with like, you know, agoraphobia or whatever else. And like those things are causing her to act like that. I think that's a very difficult thing to convey. And I think she did a good job of it. And like the general fear of like and feeling of responsibility for what she's doing is really good. Some of the other side characters are really awesome. Like the character Chowdhury, I think that she reports the crime to, being like the fake, you're such a brave, strong woman for doing this. That was a really great, small, little, like 5-minute performance for that actress, whoever that was. And I think the core concept of the movie, which obviously has real world inspiration from like the Amazon things, like where they've recorded assaults or whatever else, like that, I think is really, really cool. And the unraveling of the mystery was fun. Like the second I put together that, like, what the tech CEO was talking about in the beginning was what we were watching too. Like, I felt like it was like fucking detective or something. Like, I like when that happens in a movie, when like it feels like you discovered it just ahead of the curve. I like that. I think on a not as technical note, I think Kimmy's outfit was awesome. The blue on orange, just a sick outfit. The blue coat on top of the orange, like whatever that was. Great
Angela's,
outfit.
Angela's.
Yeah, sorry, Angela's. Yeah. I keep saying Kimmy. Yeah.
I just say Kimmy's. I was like, oh damn, she looks good. I mean, Zoe Kravitz can put on anything. I thought she looked great in her nighty as well. It didn't matter what she was wearing. I was like, but yeah, that's a sick outfit.
That was a sick outfit. I thought her apartment was also sick. That was one of the coolest movie apartments I think I've seen in a long time. I was like, shit,
I didn't realize how sick it was until the end, like when they kind of did that final walk through, and I was like, oh shit, that place. I thought it was cool the whole time, but I was like, that's really sick. It is also a nightmare to be sleeping with someone who can see inside your house.
Yes.
Like, you can never lie about what's going on. Even when he closed his blinds, they were see-through enough. You'd be like, you can't just be like, I'm just chilling on the couch and say you're busy doing something and not have to answer for that. That's a tough freedom to give up.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ken.
No, you go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
Sure. Well, I'm with you guys about the third act kind of falls apart. The very end, the very conclusion, I thought was pretty – the way she kind of uses Kimmy as like a weapon there near the end, I thought was cool. I noticed one thing, because I have like PTSD about meta shit in movies now, so I try to pick up on things. But okay, the guy who was essentially stalking her throughout this movie with the binoculars,
Buzz from Home Alone,
Devin Rattray from Home Alone.
What?
Buzz.
He was Buzz.
And his name.
And his name. She goes, by the way, what's your name? And he goes, he essentially looks at the fucking camera and goes, Kevin. I'm like, was this fucking weirdly intentional about a woman who was stuck home alone, and you have a guy from home alone named Kevin? Like, what is this? He had to have known when he cast him that that was weird. Like that was,
yeah.
But I know, you know, doesn't detract from how I felt about the movie. I still enjoy the movie, but that was funny to me. Didn't he also just get canceled for something?
He did something fucked up. I forget what.
I think he might have got arrested for like domestic abuse. So
yeah, something fucked up.
Yes, yeah. If that's the case, then fuck him. But yeah, I couldn't help but notice that during the movie. Cause I'm like, is that fucking Buzz again? Oh yeah, it is. All right.
Definitely stood out to me as well. But I think the thing is, for me, what I really liked about this movie is I think that the first two actually set it up really well. And I think that they use that concept of like, you know, this sort of technology like speaker tech and all that stuff really, really well to make the woman in the window mystery refreshing. Because like we watched The Woman in the Window, like that Amy Adams shit movie. And like that's just fucking, it was boring. And it was just like lame. And this did it so much better and incorporated it in a way that is like, that's like a perfect update on that genre of movie by incorporating like this sort of Alexa or whatever, again, speaker tech shit. I thought that was brilliant. I think that the way that they elevated, you know, the sort of mystery behind it and like the feeling of people conspiring against you were like, especially when they're showing like the visions that she's having of like all the, like the actual assault happening. Like half the time, I'm like, I don't even know if she's fabricating this in her mind or what, or if like none of this is happening. And like that kind of kept me on edge a little bit as well. I think that was really well, but I think the cons here are that there are few too many moving parts. And I think like if you take out some of the unexplained backstory or remove the mother or the love interest or the stalker, like this has stronger footing than it would otherwise. And I think the ending 20 minutes of the movie are really what kind of lost me, because they go from these like normal people that are just really afraid and they have like a very intense phobia to like these like cold-blooded killers like Buzz from Home Alone fucking stabs a guy in like the heart and like she's executing people with a nail gun like and doing these crazy things. It just felt like a character flip, considering like we know, because you've told us, that these two characters are really, really afraid people who are shut-ins. And like maybe part of it's just like, hey, they're in their house, like this is their home turf or whatever, but like that felt like a little bit of like a not a betrayal of character, but a little bit. And then it just sort of like ends very abruptly to it, in a sense. Like I felt like we were in the middle of like our climax sequence and it just was like, oh yeah, over. And I was like, oh, like, because they show what's called like the Brad being walked away in chains, and I'm just like, oh, that's the movie. And like I just felt like I'd missed something or along the way.
The final scene,
a clear character shift, which is like, and also three dead bodies, like she's killed 100 people before
and executed them, like walk up to him and shot them in the head with a nail gun. Man,
The last scene as well was kind of jarring, where all of a sudden it, like they play a fucking pop song. Yeah, and it ends with a fucking freeze frame. Like it's 1984. That was okay. I do like this movie because I think in general it's well made. There is some really weird shit in it. Like, but it's just, I don't know, it's watchable and it's short. It's not, I'm sure bloated fucking run times and make 3-hour movies about nothing. This is an hour and a half. It's watchable, it's fine. But yeah, there's some easy to make fun of shit that goes on in the film, for sure.
The hour and a half is such a huge fucking selling point. It was like, I started it, I think I must have misread something when I was looking up what it's even about, and I thought I saw 220 minutes somewhere.
I did too. No, I saw 2.5 hours when I put this into Google, and I'm like, this, I'm gonna fucking jump off a bridge. Like this is, I cannot, I'm not gonna be able to get through this. So yeah, that's
okay. That's what I saw, the same exact thing. And so that's what I went into it thinking it was going to happen. And I just happened to like roll on the remote while I was watching, and it kind of brought up the time when I was halfway through it already. And I was like, oh, thank God. Cause that's like, I wasn't in love with it. And I was like, I don't know if I can do 2.5 hours of this. And once it shifted, I was like, all right. I liked it better after that, where I realized like, okay, this isn't the rest of my fucking day here.
Yeah. And I think that's something that's a big asset to any thriller movie, is like when you're brief enough, like it can really help, because like you don't have to stretch along the anxiety or the tension or anything like that. Like you just build up, the roller coaster goes up and then goes down. In this case, I think the down was like very sharp down, but like it was, again, I think I really liked the build. I liked the ride up to the drop of King Ka here, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like that's really fun for me. And that's what builds it up to 76 for me. But yeah, I think we're all in like sort of the same ballpark. Critics really love this movie. audiences didn't love it that much. I think it's like a 40-50 point difference on like Rotten Tomatoes or something like that. It's crazy. It's like a 90 critics for critics.
Love Soderbergh. The critics love Soderbergh, man. Yeah.
They love anything he does. And again, Soderbergh, big experimental guy. This one's a little bit more of a traditional movie than like what was the Cruise movie he did that was like all improv with Meryl Streep and Let Them All Talk? Is that it?
I don't know that one.
Right? Good. Yeah, Let Them All Talk. It was like an all like a movie where like they just improv the entire thing basically, except for like some of the bigger details. Lucas Hedges was in that, yeah. Meryl Streep, Diane West,
Gemma Chan. The last Soderbergh thing I remember watching, I might have accidentally seen something here or there, is Mosaic. Remember Mosaic?
Wow. Yeah. That's fucking wow. That's,
dude,
that's
that was in the past. That was so weird. A choose your own adventure. I honestly forget at all what it was about what I ever chose. I think there's a murder on a ski mountain, right? Does that make sense?
I just remember watching the trailer for it, and I remember there being like snow and shit like that, but I don't remember much more beyond that. Who else was in that? Sharon Stone? Oh, okay. That's cool, I guess. Pee Wee Herman. That's interesting. That's just fucking Soderbergh, dude. That's just such a weird thing for him to do. But yeah, man, I dig in. I liked a lot about this movie, just wasn't overly thrilled with it. Before we go, we're going to be doing, in honor of the Super Bowl, which is going to be happening at least in our time in like 4 hours, something like that, we'll be doing a draft, a reprisal of an old draft we once did, which is non-football movie/TV characters with football names. Last time we basically zeroed it in on movies. This time opening it up to movie and TV. Not going to try and like too much rehashing of it last time. Obviously, all four of us are going to be, or all three of us are going to be drafting. I also have an audience czar who gave me a pool of picks to choose from. I already predetermined all the pick order here. So it's going to be Chris, then Fights, then Audience, then me, based off of a randomizer of a list, whatever. All right. So, Chris, you have 1-1 overall. Who are you picking?
All right. And I made sure to stick to school and position on the field.
Okay.
All right. I got a defensive end out of Nebraska from the movie After Earth, Cypher Rage.
Ooh, that's good.
A defensive end. He will be the heir apparent, and Nebraska stinks now. I don't know why he would play there, but he will be the heir apparent to Ndamukong Suh. This is a guy who's probably going to get called for 3 face masks a game, just ripping people's helmets off. But Cypher Rage, yeah, my 1-1.
Yeah, that would be, would not want to go up against him at all.
Yeah. I got this. I'm ill prepared for this. I'm gonna say that first off. But my first overall pick is obviously Luke Hobbs, middle linebacker out of Penn State.
Actually like that a lot. That's because I don't know why the Penn State middle linebacker thing always was it. Paul Szczesny is from Penn State.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Damn, that's really good. I had Luke Hobbs on my list too because that is such a great football name and like something with the last name Hobbs. And anti shout out to Nate Hobbs on the Raiders. But yeah, I don't know why it's just a great football name. And plus, obviously, The Rock just has the perfect Adonis football body.
Yeah.
Okay, so the audience czar is up next. I don't know if they gave it to me in the order they want it to be in, but I'm just going to go straight from the top. Their first pick from the movie Limitless, Carl Van Loon, who he's going to have as a center from Boise State, which I think Carl Van Loon was Robert De Niro character, I think, in that?
Had to have been.
Yeah.
My take going into this draft was going to be, any name, if you say it right, is a football name. And
it's true.
Yeah.
I think the audience has proven me wrong. That dude Paul doesn't sound a football player at all.
It's so when I hear Van, I do think like Van Routen or whatever. Like it's sort of like a, like if you have Van or Vaughn and, or not Vaughn, I guess, but if you have Van as part of your last name, you're most likely going to be either like, who's the Cowboys guy? Van Der Esch? Or there was that Titans linebacker.
Player in the history of football.
Cowboy color, though. And then there's that guy. There's that Titans, I think, linebacker, defensive end, Van something that had a cool one. And then linebacker or your offensive line. So it's a good pick. So my first pick overall, and I'm happy he fell to me, I'm going to pick quarterback out of Boise State from the great movie Dune, Duncan Idaho.
Oh.
How did I not think of that? Holy shit. Wow. Good one, man.
Great football name, Duncan Idaho. So out of place in the Dune universe for some reason, but like Pierce Paul Atreides and then Duncan Idaho. Makes no sense, but it's just, I think it's just a great, it would be an awesome goddamn quarterback name. And if he actually went to like Idaho, it would just be a an Idaho school, rather, like Boise State, it would be so cool. I think it would be.
Well, I don't know.
That's Momoa, by the way.
Where does he play?
Boise State.
Okay. For some reason, I was thinking Boise State, and I was like, why was I thinking that? Because you said it. Okay.
Yeah, specifically Boise State. But yeah, and just Momoa and that would have been awesome. My next pick, and I did mine all out of order too, which kind of is frustrating for this, the sake of this. I'm going to do Logan Roy. And he's going to be a punter from Duke, because that is such a punter name, Logan Roy. Like a punter or kicker name, just perfect fit in my opinion. Zero in there. Logan Roy's from Succession. Sorry.
So, okay.
All right. Next up is our audience. They're going to pick. There's such a weird taste of movies. I love this. They're going to pick. Actually, I'm going to skip this one. I'm going to do Aldous Snow from Forgetting Sarah Marshall. They have them as a safety from Xavier.
Okay.
I kind of like that. Aldous Snow would be a cool football name.
Aldous Snow's not too shabby.
Yeah. Snow with the pick. Like, there'd be so many cool, like not memes, but like, there'd be really cool t-shirts from that. If you're last name Snow and you're a football player.
Newspapers would have a fucking field day with that guy as a
snow day
covered in snow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's a safety snowball. Too, covered by snow. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Is beautiful. It mean? Is it
Fights is up next.
Fight. Okay.
Slot wide receiver out of Clemson, Patrick Bateman.
Okay. Right, Clemson. I like that actually. Patrick Bateman. What's okay? I'm trying to like picture it in my head. The actual psychopath killer, Patrick Bateman.
Right.
I mean, he was in great shape. Well, that's worth.
Like, he's no, he wasn't. He, I don't know if he was in football shape, but he was. Yeah.
He was up to 1,000 sit-ups a day. He
Yeah.
Very well.
Jesus. All right, Chris, you got back to backs.
Top 10 favorite movie of all time for me, by the way.
Very, very good.
So good. All right. My next pick, I went back and forth because it was – but I almost went with Terrence Fletcher as a middle linebacker for Penn State.
Yeah.
But I whiplash – I decided to go differently because this fits the school. As a wideout for Miami, Sebastian Wilder from La La Land.
Wow.
Which fits multiple. First of all, Sebastian Wilder is a great football name. But secondly, perfect with Miami. They have the duck mascot. His name is Sebastian. Mm-hmm. Sebastian Wilder. You could get an NIL deal going. These two in commercials together. they'd be gangbusters. So Sebastian Wilder is my wideout pick. Mm-hmm. And then is it back to me for
Yes.
Okay. Back. I want a running back from Southern Miss, probably like a 3-star recruit who ends up making it pop, like a Darren Sproles type that pops off the NFL. Lucius Fox from Batman, the Morgan Freeman character. Speedster, you know, probably returns punts as well. One of those guys that you look at the end of the season, he's got 2,500 yards from scrimmage. So Lucius Fox is my number three.
Yeah, like, shoot, who's that Ravens guy that, like, had most of the records Sproles broke? Derek, or, oh, God, some Ravens fan is going to fucking murder me. God damn it, I forget.
Recently, or?
No, it was like, or during the 2000s into, like, the, whatever. The guy yelling at your radio right now, or your podcast, whatever you're playing your podcast on, not a radio, you're fucking mad, and I don't understand why. Okay, so next up, Fights, you're back up.
Left tackle out of Wisconsin, Bill Cutting, the Butcher.
Ooh. That's a good one. That's a good one.
That's really good. The Butcher Cutting. That's great. You do not want to – I'll tell you what. If you're a defensive end or a tackle, whatever, you do not want to go up against a guy called Butcher. I like that a lot. Although I will say that if you're from a Wisconsin tackle, I feel like typically has some Polish-ish sounding last name.
Yeah.
Be like some weird sounding thing, but yeah, I do like that a lot. Our audience is back up. Let's do. Oh, some of these are pretty good. Okay, this one. Let's do Calvin Candy, wide receiver out of LSU.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, Calvin Candy, tremendously bad racist.
The everlasting love scene's on.
Everlasting man, I'm Belfast. So goddamn good. That scene, I played that song a million times after that. But yeah, Calvin Candy, wide receiver at LSU. I like that. Obviously, tremendous racist, terrible person, but I guess fictional Louisiana staple. My next pick, I'm going to take a safety from LSU. I'm going to take from the movie The Suicide Squad, Robert Dubois.
You got the French aspect on it too. Shit, dude.
And Robert Dubois, internationally known assassin in The Suicide Squad, but in my case, he's going to be an incredibly great safety from LSU. And man, that would be, people would love Robert Dubois in Louisiana. Imagine if there's an LSU player with like that type of name, they would love that guy. With my next pick, I think I'm going to do an offensive tackle from Wisconsin, just like Fights picked. Could be any, either tackle spot. I'm going to pick Gus Polinski from Home Alone.
Oh,
played by John Candy. Gus Polinski, it's a name where you could either be a coach or you could be a tackle. Doesn't matter. But Gus Polinski, I think, would be like, that's a beefy boy. That's like a 6'4 fucking tuna can. 6'4, like 375 pounds. Just a massive man. And I love him as an offensive tackle. All right. Our guy is back up. Our audience is back up. I kind of want to take a pick that might cuck someone here, but you know what? I won't. I'm going to do instead. They pick running back from BYU, Will Turner, which I think that does sound like a running back for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's a good pick. Next up, Fights.
I am going with a wide receiver out of the University of Southern California, Dewey Riley.
Ooh. Mm. Damn it. Top tier. That's a top tier pick. Yeah.
Dewey Riley. Damn. That guy ends up on the Patriots, I think, almost. For sure.
Does he take the Chris Hogan role, like that mid, like, yeah, like yeah, spot yeah. receiver role? Yeah. That's legit. It's back to me now, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to need an executive decision on this, because if you feel it's kind of a nickname, so if you feel like it's cheating, I have a few others in my Rolodex I can go with, but I went with an offensive tackle out of Alabama from the movie Old, Mid-sized Sudan.
No, you're going to absolutely pick that.
Okay, good. Because that boy that we're talking 6'6", 378. Just bullying dudes on the O-line. Like, this is a guy who might be a bust and a half, but he could be an NFL Hall of Famer as well. So mid-sized Sudan is my fourth pick. And then it's back to me for the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I had a few that I almost went with, but I think in your last draft, when you guys did this, somebody went with Brick Tamblyn.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So I kept it in the Anchorman tradition. I went with a quarterback out of Michigan State, Champ Hines. The Michigan State quarterbacks, they love their alliteration, with Connor Cook and Kirk Cousins, and they love their quarterbacks with weird names, Brian Lewerke, Rocky Lombardi. And I think keeping in that tradition, Champ Hines, takes over at, quarterback for Michigan State. That's my last pick.
I like that. That's a good one. All right. Fights, your last pick.
My last pick is a safety from – where does he play safety?
Good safety school. Throw him a pit.
Safety. I want to say I'll say he plays safety to Oregon. Charles Minor.
Hey, what's Charles Minor from?
The Office.
The Office. Yeah, that's Idris Elba.
Idris Elba in The Office.
Oh, shit. Seriously, that's his name in that? I have no idea. Fuck, that's really good, actually. Damn, Charles Minor. He should have played for a minor team, like one of the, whatever team has the minor as their mascot. I can only think of basketball ones, to be honest.
Is UTEP? Are they the minor? No,
they're UTEP's the minors, but I think is that. Yeah, I think that maybe. I don't really know. I'm bad with college football mascots.
You know, who plays safety? UNLV. He's a running rebel.
Okay, even better. I actually like that. UNLV. Okay, it's the audience's last pick. Okay, so they have Dominic Toretto on here as a tight end from Ohio State. And I considered it. I don't know. I don't like it that much. I think I'm going to go to a different one. Let's do Jeremiah Mercer from Four Brothers, D end from UCLA.
Jeremiah Mercer's a very good one.
That's a really good one. The only part, UCLA, I don't know if that fits Jeremiah Mercer.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a Texas guy.
Yeah,
you know I mean, Mercer, I just think Texas.
That's Yeah, that's a Big 12 guy.
Yeah, I just think Texas more with that. All right, for my last one, last pick of the draft, I have a lot on here. Like, I have, we could talk a little bit about the ones we have left off our list in a minute. Yeah. I'm going to go with, from the movie Ocean's 11, Rusty Ryan as my coach.
Whoa, I love it.
Coach from Pitt.
Is he part of the Ryan lineage, or is he an unrelated Ryan?
He could be like a what do you call it? Like an offshoot cousin or something.
Cousin of Ryan.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And he's very skinny. And then it's like, he's just like the antithesis of a regular Ryan. But Rusty Ryan, just great name, man. I love that. And I think it's just a perfect coach name. To go over our teams, Chris, you have Cypher Rage, Sebastian Wilder, Lucius Fox, Midsize Sudan, and then Champ Hines. Fights, you have Luke Hobbs, Patrick Bateman, Dude Riley, Charles Minor. Audience has Carl Van Loon, Aldous Snow, Calvin Candy, Will Turner, Jeremiah Mercer. I have Duncan Idaho, Logan Roy, Robert Dubois, Gus Polinski, and Rusty Ryan. Do you guys have any big ones left off your list that you wish you could have included?
Yeah, I had three. I brought up Terrence Fletcher, who is a linebacker for Penn State, who, I mean, if we're basing it on the personality, that character would have been a fucking bruiser. Mm-hmm. I had, from West Side Story, Bernardo Vasquez, who would have been a strong safety for UTEP. And I have Sam Witwicky, who would have been a kicker for Rutgers from Transformers.
Sam Witwicky would have been really good as a kicker.
Yeah.
That's a guy whose name you curse when he makes it to the NFL on your team and just misses an extra point where you need it.
Fucking Witwicky.
Witwicky, that motherfucker.
it cost me money.
Really good.
Yeah.
Fights, did you have any that you had left off?
I actually didn't. I went hard five.
Our audience.
There's so many. Sometimes I'll have extras, but there's so many choices here. I knew I was going to be safe. When you did say, I had eyes on Dom Toretto, but I had eyes on the entire Fast franchise. Ryan O'Connor was going to be a quarterback. Don't worry about it. But I decided I was either going to go all in and have just five characters from the Fast Furious, or spread the wealth around. And I opted for the second
one. Okay. One I almost went with, but I didn't feel good about it because his character is not technically released. I almost went with Nathan Drake as a quarterback somewhere, but Uncharted has not come out yet, so I decided to go against it.
Drake would be great.
Nathan Drake, that's a quarterback name, I feel like. Yeah.
Our audience had Mitch Buchanan from Baywatch, which would have been pretty cool. Gunnar Jensen from Expendables, which does – it's just because it sounds like Gunnar – was it – what's your guy, Olsenski? Or, yeah. Peter Mullark as a cornerback, which – that guy would have sucked. That guy would have gotten burnt like crazy. My God. Could not disguise the coverage to save his life. Robert McCall as a running back, which would have been great. Expendables like guy. Rod Kimble from Hot Rod as a quarterback would have been solid.
Yeah.
Linus Caldwell from Oceans as a linebacker. Some of the ones I left off, Mikey Saber from Red Rocket as a wide receiver from SMU.
I think
would have been solid. I had from – did you guys watch White Lotus? I think you did, Fights.
No, I did not.
So there's a character in that named Mark Mosbacher, which just sounds like a coach to me. Yeah. Alonzo Harris from Training Day would have been solid. Yeah. John Spartan from Demolition Man as a defensive tackle would have been sick. What else? Zeus Carver from Die Hard 2, which is Samuel Jackson's character. And Dexter Morgan, I thought I could have maybe worked.
Oh, Dexter Morgan's very good.
Dexter Morgan might have worked, yeah. And yeah, I think that's pretty much all one. I had Rick Dalton too. I was just like, I don't know how to fit in Rick Dalton here. Exactly. Anyway, and a couple other random ones. Carl Havoc from I Think You Should Leave. I thought might have been a funny one too. If you had like a linebacker named Carl Havoc. But yeah, I think we all had pretty good teams for the most part. Pretty solid run for all of us. And this is always fun doing these. But yeah, so that's the end of episode. What number did we say we're on? Season 2, episode 24 of LCB. The next full episode of regular LCB, we will have Jeff back on. Obviously, he's in all of our thoughts. But yeah, thank you so much, Chris, for joining. Thank you so much, Fights, for joining. And we will be back with an episode of The Bracket later this week.
Love you, Jeff.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.